Okay. Mishlei Perek Gimel. I was hoping to finish the Perek today, but I got caught up. We've got a lot of heavy stuff, interpersonal relationship issues that we have to work through. And I think hopefully it'll be very meaningful, because as you'll see, each pasuk has its own distinctive advice. And the truth is that some of them seem to overlap, so we may try to distinguish between them. But either way, we're going to take it one by one. But here are the four psukim we'll talk about tonight from the top. Number one, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Al Timna Tov Mi Ba'alav, Biyos L'El Yadcha Lasos. So, I mean, we're going to try to translate this as best we can, but obviously we're going to look at different interpretations of each of these psukim. But the first pasuk tonight is, do not withhold good from one who deserves it. Now, that word deserve is not in the pasuk. You will not find the pasuk deserve there. The word deserve in the pasuk. Al timna tov mi ba'alav presumably means the word ba'al, like a ba'al abayis, right? In the women's shir we talked about a midrash a couple weeks ago, the ba'al habira, right? Ba'al means an owner. So it says, don't take goodness away from he who owns it. Okay? So that's where the deserve is probably coming into the translation. And then it says, Bihios la'el yad chalasos. Bihios seems to be while. Like, that's the word, Bihios, while you have this in your hands to do. Now, the word el in this pasuk probably means strength. How do they translate it here? When you have the power to do it. Like, Micha mocha be'elim Hashem. Elim in that pasuk, in that phrase means, that pasuk means, of all the powers. Who among the powers is like Hashem? Now, what exactly does that mean? Is a whole other issue. But here, what it's saying is, don't prevent goodness from the person who owns it while you have the power to do it. Now, there's a lot of enigma in that pasuk, a lot of ambiguity. So, what do we think? Good. Oh, so good. That's how Rashi understands it in his second understanding. And that's what you have in source number two. Dabar acher, al timna tov mi ba'alav, al timna tzedakah min ha'ani. Who's the one that is the owner of goodness? That's the person you're giving tzedakah to. He, meaning in according to this translation, he deserves your charity. Right? He's poor. He's the rightful recipient, as Ron was saying. So that's what Rashi says, Al timna tzedaka min ha'ani, biyos la'el yad chalasos tzedaka. While you can still give tzedaka, make sure to give it. Shema yavel yom v'ein la'el yadecha. Because one day it might happen, chas v'shalom, that you won't be able to give anymore. You'll no longer have those means. And you see that Mr. David says the same, a similar idea, mi balav mi bal hatova, rotzolam mi shabal l'kabal hatova. Right? The owner of your favor. Right, the one who gets your favor. When you have the ability to do this good. So why is it that we're so worried? The truth is, it could be based on a Mishnah in Avos. The Gemara, the Mishnah tells us in source number four, Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Akol Hamakayim Asator Mioni, someone who still, you know, fulfills the Torah despite their poverty. Sofal Hakayim Osher. One day they'll be able to do the Torah, they'll be able to fill the mitzvahs through wealth. But anyone who is wealthy and doesn't fulfill the Torah when they can, so they also will lose their riches, and they'll nullify and not keep the Torah once they're poor also. So the truth is that implicit in this Mishnah and also in our pasuk is the fact that wealth is a gift that we've been given to do the right things with. We talked about this a couple months ago in this year with a completely different pasuk. Yeah.
Is it necessarily saying when you have the means to do it, meaning you have the money to do it? Or is it talking about the fact that you should do it now while you're alive, because once you're no longer alive, you don't have the ability to do mitzvos?
That could be. My impression was more based on the word yadcha. The word yadcha is a pretty specific word. It doesn't mean biyos Chayacha. I mean, it could be. It could be. I mean, the pasuk we're interpreting somewhat of it, somewhat figuratively anyway. But I understood Yadcha to be referring to what you have in your hand, what you have at your disposal. But you could be right. And you don't see an indication either way from the Rashi or the Mitzvah that we quoted either, that it's referring to life versus money. But what I find interesting is Rashi's first interpretation, which we skipped, or at least in my sources, I didn't bring you. So Rashi says in source number 5, Al Timna told me ba'alav, Imra Isa Chavercha, Chafetz Lahetiv La'anim, Al Timna Ehu. This is a fascinating read by Rashi. What does it mean? If you see your friend wants to do good for poor people, Al Timna Ehu.
Don't discourage
him from doing something good. Now, this is a fascinating read. First of all, what's the Hava Mina? Why would, if you see someone trying to do good, you see someone trying to be a good person, doing a favor for somebody else, why would you think that a person would stop them? What are possible psychological reasons, Michael?
They have other uses for their money. They want...
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I mean, why are you giving it to that charity? We've got a better one over here.
I want you to invest in my business.
Or maybe they know the person can't really afford to do
it. Oh, they know the person better. So you would think, no, you shouldn't, you know, maybe it's my job to make sure that they keep their own money. They're so nice. They're so charitable, but they need it themselves. Okay, interesting. There's a story they say about Neshama Karlbach. When Karlbach was known for obviously his charity and for his kindness to other people, and he would give stuff away from his house. People would be constantly in Karlbach's house, in Shlomo Karlbach's house, and they say on one occasion there was a man that came and he took a coffee mug from Shlomo Karlbach's house, and he was walking out the door, and Shema was like, "Dad, he's taking the mug. We need that mug." He says, no, he needs it more than us. And the Shema said back to Shlomo Karl, her father, "How could he need it more than us? We have none left. That was our last one. He mamish took our last one. How could he need it more than us?" So that's, you know, some people like Shlomo Karlbach struggle with that threshold about where is the line where you lose more than you're giving up. So maybe Adina is making the point. The Havamina here is that maybe you would stop that person from giving too much, lest they lose too much of their own wealth by giving it to other people.
Another thing is that sometimes somebody wants to give to a poor, they don't need it. They're just lazy bums.
Uh-huh.
So okay,
or maybe you would
maybe
think so.
Maybe they're not.
So. Right. So you can't necessarily assume. So then based on whichever Havamina we're talking about, would be the instruction of Shlomo Melech. Right? Shlomo Melech could be saying, Al Timna, don't prevent that person who thinks they're doing well and you think they could use the money more. Don't stop them from doing a good thing. Maybe that's the Havamina. Maybe the Havamina, like David saying, that don't assume that the recipient of their charity isn't worthy of the charity. Don't make that assumption. Maybe that's what, according to David. I think in some ways...
Could it also be that you're, you know, like, worried, I don't know, jealous of
okay,
what the word
yeah.
would be?
Okay, that's what I was about to get to that. Oftentimes, when we look around us and we see other people doing good things, so the proper response is obviously, wow, that's so nice that they're doing that. But what if you should really be doing that? And the only reason you're not doing it is because you don't feel any pressure to do it. But once you see somebody else doing it, once you see somebody else giving the money, once you see at the Young Israel Appeal on Yom Kippur night that someone's giving $100 to the youth fund or whatever it is, so now you feel like you have to do it. Oh, I wish that person wouldn't have given the money, now I have to give it. So Al Timna told me ba'alav, don't prevent somebody else from doing a good thing because you think, because then you're going to feel at the pressure to do it yourself. So that could be the end of the pasuk, right? If you're going to understand like Rashi, this is the trick for Rashi. I'm not really sure how Rashi understands the end of the pasuk. Rashi is saying that the first half of the pasuk means don't prevent someone from doing something good. Tov mi ba'alav means don't prevent someone from doing a favor. Right? They have the ability to do good. Don't prevent them from doing it. Bihios la'el yad chalasos. What does it mean, bihios? Bihios la'el yad chalasos. Because you also have the power to do it. Don't prevent them from doing it because you have the power to do it, but you're not doing it. Right? That shouldn't be the cause of your preventing somebody else doing something good. I mean, you have to overcome your own inhibitions, your own hesitations, your own apprehensions in order to do something good yourself before preventing somebody else. So that's an interesting psychological insight that that Rashi might be alluding to in source number 5. The Malbim takes all of these psukim in a very different direction. And he says that each one of them, despite the fact that they sound like they're referring to another person, they're actually referring inward. They're referring to ourselves. It's very Hasidish of the Malbim. The Malbim is not Hasidish. It couldn't have been. But the Malbim, every situation, every one of these four psukim is referring to the person themselves. So let's look at the Malbim source number 6. Kain ein ra'oi limnoa tov mi nefesh haruchaniyut, or haruchniyit, shetova sa hi ha'alicha b'darchei Hashem, ach sheish b'koch ha'achol ha'asas la'tov v'chesed. Don't refrain from doing good for your spirituality, because it's whose goodness means to follow the ways of Hashem, to do to Torah mitzvos, while you can still do them. Right? B'darach Hashem, achar sheyesh b'choch ha'achal la'asos la'tov v'chesed. You can do those things. So it's a little bit ambiguous, even what the Malbim is saying. The word b'yos, according to the Malbim, is a tricky word also. What does it mean? Do spirituality while you can still do it. Al timna tov mi ba'alav. What's ba'alav? Ba'alav means your spiritual side. Don't prevent doing good, meaning Torah and mitzvos, from your spiritual side. B'yos la'el yadcha la'asos. While you can still do them. What does it mean, while you can still do them? What?
They could be time-bound.
Okay, that's a good point. It could be a time-bound mitzvah. Maybe it's Pesach, and you only have 8 days, 7 days to eat matzah, right? It could be Sukkot. You only have that long to do the Sukkot, to shake the lulav. It's interesting. It's an interesting take. I thought of it more of on a macro level. Not necessarily on a micro level in terms of that specific time zone, but in terms of life. And I spoke about this a little bit on our Sunday morning shir, Sunday morning chabura, when we spoke about the PSS and the Rebbe's Chuvas HaTzalmidim, that there are some things in life that when it comes to a mitzvah, it's only challenging when you're younger. And this is particularly important when it comes to desires that younger people have challenges with. Whether it's greed or food or money, you know, or the opposite gender, whatever it is, right? When you're younger, you have a taiva for something, right? And as you get older, those things just become natural. You don't need money as much, and you don't have the need to eat anymore. And I remember my grandfather once telling me, like, fast days are like regular days for him, because like he just doesn't feel the need to eat. So some people are like that. As you get old, you just feel less and less inclined to eat, you know, delicacies. And the Rambam talks in Pirkei Avos, I couldn't find it when I looked for it recently. But the Rambam says that there are some things you have to chop while you're younger, right? To get the schar of certain mitzvos, you know, they become natural and easy to do when you get older. It's only when you have the taiva working against you it's not worthwhile, but you get paid for the, you know, mi pum tsara agra, right? The amount that you have to overcome is the amount that you're going to get out of it. I think I've told this story before. I really have to find the story because I don't know all the details of it. But there was once a Rebbe that was going on a train that he was passing by the Golden Gate Bridge. And all the Talmidim rush over to the window. They rush over to the window and say, "Oh, look, the Golden Gate Bridge." And they rush over to the Rebbe and they say, "Rebbe, you know, Golden Gate Bridge, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You know, we want to go see it." So he says, "And it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the Golden Gate Bridge, but it's also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have the ability to see the Golden Gate Bridge and to learn Torah instead." I'm never going to have this opportunity again to decline looking at the Golden Gate Bridge and study Torah instead. It's an interesting take, and it's at odds with some, you know, other sources. But either way, the concept I think rings true, which is that there's a certain, you know, there's a running clock on certain things, whether it's micro or macro, that things in certain time zones or things in times of life that we can't lose. And I think that's what the Malbim might be getting at when he says, "In ro'elim noa tov minafesh haruchnius," that you shouldn't prevent yourself from doing good things while you're still able to do those things. Because there's going to come a time, either at the end of your life, like Leonard was saying earlier, or when that time zone has you know, elapsed, that you can no longer do those things. So al timna tov, on a spiritual level, don't lose out on doing those things. I saw an interesting thing in line with this. You know, I was reading a book recently called The Power of Habits. I think I might have mentioned it last week.
Rambam has a whole thing about habits.
Yeah. Habits is very important. But the book quoted from Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if people are familiar. Hopefully you're not. But if you are, so there are a whole bunch of different rules. I don't know, 12 or 13 12 rules.
12
steps.
One of the 12.
So one of the 12s is actual spirituality. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are different interpretations of the rule. And, you know, something bigger than yourself or a power other than yourself. You believe in something, right? The koach is, the force behind the rule is to believe in something other than yourself. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are a lot of studies that go on in terms of the effectiveness and how it's so popular and how it's so successful. So I found an interesting study in regards to the age. The age component in regards to the religiosity success. In regards to the success and spirituality. Look at source number 7. Additional evidence for this supposition can also be found in the Alcoholics Anonymous literature, where the positive association between Alcoholics Anonymous attendance and gains in spirituality, meaning the more successful you were in your spiritual fulfillment, that's, you know, dictated the better attendance at the meetings, was strongest among AA affiliates with lower initial spirituality at the baseline. And who are those people? Younger people. So taking together these findings suggests that younger Alcoholics Anonymous affiliates who are reportedly less religious than older Alcoholics Anonymous affiliates may engage in the use of more spirituality or religious practices as a result of the Alcoholics Anonymous attendance than older Alcoholics Anonymous affiliates. Meaning, because they have a lower baseline when they go through the program, it's sort of like a, what do they call it? Like a
jumpstart?
It's a jumpstart, but it's also like a catapult type of a phenomenon where you might be pulling back further, right? They might be starting at a lower level, but once you go through it, they catapult further, right? They go further than where the older generation is. So there's something to that there's a malleability while you're younger in a religious sense that gives you a little bit more room to grow, if you will. So then that's sort of in line with what I was saying before, that religiosity could be something that you can grow greater while you're younger. And that applies to everybody. You know, you're always younger than you're going to be tomorrow, so it's always relevant. Moving on to the second pasuk. Back to source number 1, the pasuk tells us, "Al tomar l'rayacha lech vashuv umachar eten v'yeshitach." Don't say to your fellow, right? Not necessarily friend, but fellow, lech vashuv. Go and come back umachar eten v'yeshitach. And I'll give you what you want tomorrow, but you really have it today. Right? That's what it's v'yesh itach, and you have it with you. Let's see how this translated here. Do not say to your fellow, come back again, I'll give it to you tomorrow, when you have it with you. Right?
Now,
what?
But the v'yesh itach is talking about the giver.
Yeah. It's talking, don't say to your friend, I'll give it to you tomorrow, when you already have it today. You owe your friend $20, you have 20 in your pocket. Don't say to him, go away, come back tomorrow, I'll give it to you tomorrow, because you have it right now. The question is why. Yeah, Michael?
There's many answers, but one that I thought of was the tying to the rules of fiducia that with a day worker.
Good.
You've got to pay a day worker a day. A person who needs money might
hold on to that thought.
Food that day.
Hold on to that thought. You don't see it yet, but it's on the sources.
Oh.
Not the Gemara.
I know.
it's not the Gemara Kedushin either. I don't think it's the Gemara.
No, it's
the Gemara
Bava Metzia.
Yeah, it's in a few different places, because all in Nezikin.
All right.
But so Hu Hayomer, the Mishnah Novos tells us, why is it that you should give it to you while it's Yeshitach? So there's a practical aspect to it. Hu Hayomer, im ein ani li mi li uchshani la'atzmi mani vim lo achshav emasai. Right, so the first part has a lot of different interpretations, but the end of it is, im lo achshav, you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? Because what's going to happen? Tomorrow he's going to come back and say, yeah, not today, tomorrow again. And you're always going to be pushing it off. Right? How many chores do we have? How many things do we have that are on our bucket list that we keep pushing down the road? I can tell you, I've got a whole list myself of things that I want to get done, and every week I say I'm going to do it, and every week I say maybe next week. Because things come up. You get busy, you get distracted. ultimately you're never going to get to it. So this is one of those things potentially on a very simple level. That al tomar l'reacha aleich v'shuv machar atein v'yeshitach. Don't push him off until tomorrow while you have it today, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Imlach shavim asa, you don't know when it can happen. Halachically, and this pasuk is very important, as Michael said, because the pasuk tells us in Devarim, lo salim pulas sachir itach ad boker. Do not hang over. Like, don't let it hang over until the morning. The wages that you pay your worker. So the pasuk says, lo salim pulas sachir itach. Don't from the word linat laila. Like, don't sleep with it. Right, don't sleep on it. Don't have your wages for your worker, you know, while you're going to sleep. And then the pasuk says ad boker, until the morning. So says the Gemara, eini yodea she'ad boker, ma tamalomer ad boker. What are you teaching me when you say until the morning? I already know. Don't sleep on it. So if you already said don't sleep on it, what does it mean ad boker? Malamin she'eno over ela ad boker rishon bovad. If you hold the guy's wages from Monday to Tuesday, so that's one iser. Maybe you would think you get another iser for holding it over to Wednesday. Say, no, it's only ad boker. It's only until one morning. So when it's one morning, so maybe you would think that you can, after one morning, you can just continue with it forever. Okay, fine, I missed the deadline. Now I can just keep it forever. Mikan ve'elach mai, amarav over mishum ba tishahe. You're still over another Isser. It might be a lesser Isser because it's not explicit in the Torah, but it's still an Isser Rabbanan at least, or Midivrei Sofrim. Amar of Yosef Maikura, what's the Pasuk? Al Tomer L'Reach Alech V'Shuv V'Machar Aten V'Yeshitach. Don't hold back the money for somebody else. Every single day, apparently, that you hold it back, you get another Isser from this Pasuk. This is a Halachic Pasuk. We might have some interesting interpretations for other things, but this is a halacha that we're learning from this pasuk. You can't hold back the wages from a worker. So that's potentially different from the first one, because the first one, at least on a literal level, is referring to giving charity. Or, as we said from Rashi, allowing somebody else to give charity. Or, we said from the Malbim, allowing your spiritual side to make the most of the opportunity. I didn't copy the Malbim on this, but he probably talks about an interesting thing in terms of the spirituality again. But here in the second pasuk, it's referring to the literal money that you shouldn't refrain from paying a person their wages, and most of the commentaries say basically the same thing. The question is why, as we just addressed. Okay, the third pasuk. Al tachrosh areyacha ra'a v'hu yoshev lavetach itach. So this is an interesting phrase. Al tacharosh. What's tacharosh?
To plow.
Don't plow on your friend. Obviously not referring to taking a plow over your friend, but the question is, why does he use that word? Okay. What are other examples of the word tacharosh, which are not used for this? I thought maybe it would be, but it wasn't. We have another word for the word, another instance of the word hacharosh. I don't want to say it.
Death.
What?
Death.
Death. Death. Oh, cheresh. Okay, that would be another interesting one. Doesn't say that. No one talks about that either. I don't think.
Thinking about Megillas Esther.
Yes. What is hacharesh tacharishi? Ki'im hacharesh tacharish beis hazos rebech v'atzala omei la yehudim imakom acher. Mordechai says to Esther, this is your moment. Don't delay. Or don't be apprehensive. That's not one of the interpretations you say here. So if you look at Rashi in source number 10, Al tachrosh al reyacha. Al tachshov. Don't think. Don't devise a plan for your friend. V'eino zaz mimashmaus charisha. And it's not, says Rashi, this is not very far off from what charisha really is, meaning plowing. Why? Ma derech hachoresh, the person who's plowing a farmer, mechin makom lizman hazria. He's setting the ground, he's getting the ground ready for the time where he has to plant. Af hachoshev ra, Mechin machom makom tachbulos belibo. He's making a place to hurt his friend in his heart. Ech yamor v'yasena. How is he going to get up and do it? So according to Rashi, what does it mean? Al tacharosh ha'reachara. Don't devise a plan to do something bad against your friend. V'hu yoshev lavetach itach. And what does that mean? V'hu yoshev lavetach itach? Anyone want to guess? Why shouldn't, or what compounds the issue of devising a plan against your friend?
Someone who trusts you.
V'hu yoshev lavetach itach. What is yoshev lavetach? So one, according to Adina, and the Mefarshim we're going to see soon, it means trust, which we'll focus on for a few minutes. Also, lavetach could mean in perpetuity, right? Right, betach like labetach, like forever. Either way, or for sure, it means security, things like that. Let's look at the Malbim. What does it mean, yoshev lavetach? So says the Malbim, atagarosh gam zeh. And remember, the Malbim is the one who's always going to bring it internally. So let's see for a second. Gam zeh masho melitza. This is also an analogy. It doesn't mean plowing over your friend or devising harm against your friend. It has an additional level of meaning. Kemosha ein ra'i shetachrosh al re'achara im hu yoshev levetach imcha ve'ein lo imcha milchama. So this, he's already reading something in. Don't devise something to hurt your friend when he's not starting up with you. Ve'ein lo imcha milchama. He doesn't have anything against you. Cain, similarly, Ein meharoi shekochos haguf yachreshu ra akochas hanefesh. The body shouldn't have any hang up against the soul. L'havidam l've'er shachas v'yoshevas yito levetach. What does that mean? A fascinating read from the Malbim. The body shouldn't have any angst or grudge against the spiritual self. Why would they? Because the spiritual self is constantly putting the body into different restrictions or different situations, right? It's, whether it means not eating cheeseburgers, which we'll see even more soon, the Rabbin will talk about more, or if it means having to schlep to shul every day, it means getting out of bed at a certain time, right? The body is always constantly at this war with spiritual self and saying, oh, I don't want to do this right now. Oh, I can't, I don't have the koach to do it right now. Why? V'hu yoshev imo levetach. What does that mean? Yoshev levetach imo. Why shouldn't the body speak out against or fight against the soul? Because the soul is yoshev levetach. Okay. The soul is entrusted to the body. That would be within the words trust. That's definitely true. I wanted to say even differently, which is in terms of levetach, meaning in perpetuity. Levetach, forever. The soul is what's going to be left over. The soul is the one that's going to continue to exist. The body depends on the soul. The body is intertwined with the soul's existence. And the soul is the one that's going to be yoshev levetach. Okay, body, you're here for a finite amount of time. Fighting with the soul is not going to help our existence in the long run. The soul is the one that has to win out. It's true, while we're here, the body has needs, but the soul's needs go beyond the body's. So it could be, according to the Malbim, means give a little more to the soul. The soul is right in this regard, because he's Yoshev Lavetach. Yeah, Leonard.
I'm not seeing how to fit that in the words when it says, Hu Yoshev Lavetach Imach, because it's not, the soul's not going to be with you forever.
Yeah, I hear. I'm good. I'm okay. Yeah, I hear. Imach. It's true. It's true. I hear. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, we'll talk about it in Parshas Vayechi. We have Team Shabbos. We'll talk about the importance of end-of-life issues and things like that, the importance of the body. But There could be an essence of kedusha for the body, which is why we have many halachos which are in regards to the body. But we'll talk about it a different time. But that's I think connected to what David was saying, which is yoshev lavetach that itach that the soul has been entrusted to the body. Meaning the body is the tool which the soul is now using. So for the body to basically abuse the soul is as if to say, like, I'm being derelict in my duty, right? That the soul is entrusting me to take care of it. So that's definitely, there's something to be said there. The Mesudas David says, in a more simple understanding, Halo hu yoshev yitach levetach, we're talking about two people. Why would you ever think to do poorly or to do bad to somebody when they're with you? They trust you. You have a relationship together. So why is it that you are fighting against it? Thank you. The truth is that based on our class tonight, I shouldn't have said, no, I'm okay. Because what was the first pasuk we said? Al timna tov mi ba'alav. Don't prevent someone from doing a chesed for you. So I should have said, yes, please, go ahead and do it. I remember I made that mistake on one of my first dates. One of my first dates, dating story with Rabbi Katz. One of the girls I was dating asked me if she could print out directions. We were going somewhere, I don't know. For a New York relationship, it was long distance. I was in Washington Heights, and she was in Queens. So it was a lot of driving. And she said, do you want me to print out directions? I said, no, I can do it. But the truth is, if you're trying to build a relationship with someone, you should allow them to give to you. You should allow them to do you favors. That's how you build relationships. So I remember, it stuck in my mind for a long time, the fact that I didn't let someone do something good for me. And I was reminded of it actually when I was preparing this class. Al timna tov mi ba'alav, according to Rashi, don't prevent somebody from doing something good for somebody else or for you. It could be for you also. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam she'hakol nehyah bidvaro. Yeah, well, I didn't get married to that girl. I married somebody else. That was not Ricky. But Rabbeinu Yonah takes this a step further. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Atach rosh ha'reacha ra, v'hu yoshe levetach itach, gam im heitzik lecha chavercha." I'm not really sure how to translate all of these words, but it seems like even if your friend does something against you, "Atach rosh ha'lavra, ba'oden yoshe levetach itach," don't do something bad to him while you're still in a relationship. You're still levetach. Kizos mida p'chusa ma'od v'derech sheker. Because this is a very lowly trait. What is he talking about?
I'm thinking.
Remember Rashi. I'm
thinking of a contract or some kind of
no,
agreement.
No, not in this situation. Al tachrosh, according to Rashi, meant al tachshov. Don't think in your head. So let's say your friend does something bad to you. He's done something that you don't like. He spoke poorly about you to somebody else, or he forgot to take out the trash. I don't know, whatever it is. He did something that you don't like. So now you're thinking in your head you're going to do something back to get back at him. You're holding a grudge, basically. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, while you're still in a relationship, he's still Yoshev Levetach Itach. You're still friends. Don't be thinking bad things. Rather, what should you do? Ach Todiehu Tchila. Tell him first. Ki Sinaso Alma Sheheralach. Because you're feeling uncomfortable based on something that he did to you. And you are no longer, I think this means, you no longer trust, you can no longer trust them. Or he can no longer trust you. That's not to say that you can think to do something poorly to somebody who you don't have a relationship with, right? He's saying that, the pasuk says that you shouldn't devise a plan against somebody you have a relationship with. Oh, but that means if I don't have a relationship with them, it's okay? So he said, no, because it's not a kal v'chomer, it's going the other way. The pasuk is telling you, it's worse to think about doing something bad to somebody who you have a relationship with. Obviously, someone who you don't have a relationship with. But it's even worse. For some, this is a very, very lowly trait for somebody to be. Let's say he's ruining your reputation among other people. Shalo right? You should first tell them that you were very upset with what they did to you, and that you can't trust them anymore, and they can't trust you anymore. Which, by the way, is not an easy thing. If we would take a step back for a second and think about this, so the people that are closest to us are oftentimes the people that we have the most expectations of, and therefore the people that we get most upset with sometimes, right? If someone, you know, at a shul event doesn't take out the garbage, okay, so that's one thing. But if your spouse doesn't take out the garbage, who do you get more upset at? The volunteer at the shul or your spouse? Obviously your spouse, because you have expectations of each other, right? You expect the other person to do what they're supposed to do. And the closer we are to people, the greater our expectations, and therefore the greater our disappointment when they don't do it. So when Rabbi Yonah is saying this, what I'm thinking about is the importance of being able to have conversations with people that we're close with the long-term effects in mind. Meaning, you have a relationship with this person. It's going to continue regardless of what's going to happen in this conversation. How am I going to have this conversation in a constructive way so that it doesn't have long-term damage to our relationship? And that's a skill that every relationship has to work on, whether it's a parent and a child, a friend to a friend, or a spouse to a spouse. Every relationship has to be able to find that balance, have that security within a relationship that when you speak to each other and give constructive criticism, it's not going to have the long-term effects of damaging that relationship. I just thought, in terms of how we build trust, especially given that phrase Yoshev Lavetach Alav Itach, that they trust you, or it means in the long term, as I said before. I thought I would bring in a story from Brené Brown's book. I spoke about Brené Brown a couple times now. I very highly recommend her book, Daring to Lead. Actually, this is the wrong book. I wrote the wrong title. That's her second book. Her first book is Daring Greatly, and that's where this quote is from. I wrote it down wrong. Sorry. So she's talking about her daughter. I think her daughter at this point is in third grade. And her daughter comes home from school, and she realized that one of her friends had betrayed her. She told one of the secrets out. And Brené Brown says to her daughter, you know, or she says to the reader, originally I wanted to say to my daughter, let's, you know, you can't trust those girls anymore, and that's terrible what they did, and as long as, you know, if we don't trust them anymore, then they can't hurt us anymore. But then she realized that that's not really the most effective plan. She's got these kids in her class. They're going to be in her class long term. Nothing's going to change. So having that kind of mentality is not going to help. What will help is the rebuilding of trust. And this is what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. When somebody does something to you that makes you uncomfortable, makes you upset, makes you disappointed, so then you have to somehow tell them, we have to rebuild trust. Not to say that I won't have anything to do with you, not to berate them and give them a whole diatribe about how you're never going to be friends with them, but to make it clear to them that you're still invested in the relationship going forward, but for right now, we've lost some trust with each other. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's always easier to say it in theory than to do it in practice. But one of the strategies that Brené Brown talks about in this book is what she calls the marble jar. And the truth is, she got it from her daughter's teacher. But she talks about the marble jar in terms of how trust is built one marble at a time. That trust is not built based on one heroic moment or one unbelievable deed that somebody does for you. But trust is built in small little moments that build up over time. And she says she had this conversation with her daughter in source number 14. It was such a great moment for both of us. When I asked her how her marble jar friends became marble jar friends, she thought about it for a minute and replied, I'm not sure. How did your marble jar friends get their marbles? After thinking about it for a while, we both started blurting out our answers. Some of hers were, they keep our secrets. They tell us their secrets. They remember my birthday. They know who Oma and Opa are. They always make sure that I'm including the fun things. They know when I'm sad and ask me why. When I miss school because I'm sick, they ask their moms to call to check on me. And mine, says Brené Brown, exactly the same. Except for me, Oma and Opa are Deanne and David, my mom and stepdad. When my mom comes to Ellen and Charlie's events, it's a great feeling to hear one of my friends say, "Hey, Diane." I think that's her, I don't know. Deanne, good to see you. I always think she remembered my mom's name. She cares. She's paying attention. Trust is built one marble at a time. And oftentimes we don't necessarily recognize this, but the people that we trust in life have also built up trust through small little things. And every person's trust marble jar can be built up over time, and it's just a matter of rebuilding. It's not a matter of cutting ties or relinquishing a relationship, but it's about building trust in small moments. And that happens reciprocally, on the other side of the other side of the aisle too. The way that we gain other people's trust is by caring for the little things. It's not by the big things. It's not by doing one heroic act for somebody. We talked about this recently on an institutional level in terms of creating relationships from the shul or from whatever institution that you're in with other shuls and other institutions. It doesn't happen by having one big program together. You can't throw one program and now say you're friends. You have to do it one little thing at a time. You're constantly helping each other out. You're constantly reaching out to see what you can do, things of that nature. If we look at the last pasuk for tonight, the last pasuk tells us, pasuk lamed, al tariv im adam chinam. Don't fight with a person for nothing. Chinam means free. Im lo gemal chara, if he hasn't done anything to you. But this is such a strange pasuk. I always found, when I read it, I'm like, really? First of all, does that mean you can start a fight if they started it? Right? Does that mean you can reciprocate if they did something to you? Right? The only time you can't, al tariv im adam chinam, im lo gemal chara. If they didn't do anything bad. But if they did something bad, you can punch back. What kind of pasuk is that, Shlomo HaMelech?
Well, isn't this the same way as the previous pasuk, where we said that it means...
Right. So that's how the Rabbeinu Yonah had to get out of that, and say it's not only Yoshe Levetach Alav, but that makes it worse. And that's why he said it like that.
Something totally different. People who want to get out of a relationship for selfish reasons...
Yeah.
Manufacture a fight. They manufacture
a fight. Oh, interesting.
That happens, sadly, you know. You make them, you know, they're now jealous of you, or they're needy, or something, and so they people
right.
do this.
People right, I that's a good point. Right, they artificially create a riv. Tarivim adam chinam. They made it up out of thin air because of some other ancillary reason that they don't want to be in the relationship. Not
they
because
guilty now. Now they make
right.
it your fault.
Right. Yeah. I actually read an article about that today when I was looking into this. Not because of this pasuk, but for something else. That oftentimes that when we become angry with other people, it's really because of some other reason, and we're just angry at them in that moment because we found an outlet that we could, you know, we found an outlet to engage our anger for something else, completely something else. It might not even be about them. It might be about something else that happened to us earlier in the day that we suppressed and is now coming out from our subconscious into our conscious. I can't tell you the amount of times that happens with children, with my own kids, you know. And I feel like, you know, I don't know if it was recently or not, but you know, my child does something, doesn't listen to me or something, like things that children are supposed to do, right? Not listen, and all of a sudden I just get like abnormally angry at them. I get upset more than I usually get upset. Why am I so upset? And then I pause and I realize that 5 minutes before that, I was trying to, I don't know, come up with a drasha from the class later that day, and I couldn't find anything, and I was getting frustrated. And now, 5 minutes later, I'm doing something with my kid, and he doesn't listen like he always doesn't listen, and I get more frustrated with my kid because 5 minutes earlier I was already frustrated with myself. And oftentimes, I don't know, that wasn't exactly David's example, but categorically, it's a similar thing where we're projecting our frustrations onto somebody else. Absolutely chinam. Asher lo gamalcha ra. They didn't do anything, right? They didn't do anything. Im lo gamalcha ra. They didn't do anything to you, and yet you're projecting onto them something which they don't deserve.
And it's usually the people you're closest to.
Well, either because of practicality, because they're always there, or because you know that you have that, you know, safety blanket that they have nothing, they can't go anywhere else. Yes, that's also a big issue. So Rabbeinu Yonah says in source number 15, Achar she'amar chinam perish ve'amar im lo gmal chara. It would seem like chinam is the same thing. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, ki chinam yikra im tariv, it's going to be called chinam, it's going to be called for nothing. Right? We talk about sinas chinam. Already in the month of Av, everyone always asks this question, what does it mean, a sinas chinam? What does it mean that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for baseless hatred? What's baseless hatred? No one hates anyone for nothing. Well, here's the definition. What's baseless hatred? Chinam yikra im tariv al dvar svasayim asher lo hezek lecha davar. Let's say somebody said something that you didn't like, but there's no actual problem that comes from it. There's no practical ramification that's actually going to hurt you. You just feel uncomfortable with it. Everything that person says, don't give your heart to it. He might have said something that's unbecoming. He might have said something that's inappropriate. But that's not a reason to give a fight. Chinam doesn't mean for nothing. It means for nothing justified. It means over something small, insignificant, that you should be able to brush away, that you should be able to say, you know, I didn't like that you said that. I'm not going to hold it against you. Just don't say it again. But for whatever reason, you decide, I'm going to fight this one out. I didn't like that you said that. Now I'm upset at you. And you know what? I'm not going to talk to you for the rest of the day. Right? Little things like that where you just... What's even worse is going back to the previous pasuk, as Rabbeinu Yonah says, Atachrosh. Don't think about it and let it fester in your subconscious that you're upset at this person without ever telling them explicitly what's bothering you. Or the pasuk in the Torah tells us explicitly, Losis nesachicha bil vavecha. Don't hate your friend in your heart. Next week's parsha will say, right, that the brothers, even though they mishandled or they mistreated Yosef, it says, Mitoch genuso, we find their shvacho. Right? What is the shvach? Lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. Every time they talked to Yosef, they spoke harshly to him. That was their shvach. What kind of shvach is that? What's so praiseworthy about speaking harshly to Yosef? Because they didn't keep it inside. That says al tachrosh. The same thing. If you're going to be upset at somebody, you have to make sure that they're aware that you're upset. Don't ruin your relationship by doing so, but make sure it's not festering inside, because that's only going to make it worse. And here Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, if a person says something that bothers you, but it really doesn't hurt you, it really doesn't take away from anything, and you're going to start a fight over something so insignificant, something so petty, that's al tariv im adam chinam. That's sinas chinam. That's starting a fight for nothing, because it's an unjustified reason. The Malbim says, and we talked about this a little bit before, again, going inwardly, according to the Malbim's take on the other Pesukim as well. Al-Tariv in source number 16. She'ein. Sorry. Ein ra'oi she'kochos ha'guf yasu melchama u'meriva im kochos ha'nefesh. That your physical abilities, your physical traits, shouldn't be in conflict with your spiritual traits. Hagam shidam alo shiasigra de kochos nachsho. Even if the body thinks that the spiritual side of a person, the soulful side of a person, is doing bad things to him. How is it doing bad things? I can't eat this. I have to wake up at this time. I have to go to sleep at this time. You think, the body thinks, that the soul is ruining everything for him. Shehem yatsru ba'adom meleches achrei tavas ha'olam ha'nosov. He thinks he's preventing him from enjoying the world. He's inhibiting him from enjoying this desire or that benefit. Einu mitzad sina. It's not because the soul hates him. Rak behefich. Shezem mitzad ahavasa v'chemlasa alav. Sometimes we think other people or other parts of ourselves are doing things to ourselves which are bad, and we feel like we're getting frustrated, and we're gonna build a grudge to the other thing or the other person. The truth is, that person's watching out for us. How many times do we have either a spouse, or when we were younger, maybe a parent, tell us, can't do this, you can't do that. And we think to ourselves, yes I can, I want to enjoy the world, I want to have fun, I want to go out tonight, I want to do this, I want to do that. And then the next day we realize, wow, I'm really happy I didn't do that. Good idea, you know, wife or father or mother, to stop me from doing that. You know, the amount of, you know, I went to OU conference last year speaking to Dr. Pelkowitz, who Rabbi Leibowitz actually quoted on Motzei Shabbos, Dr. David Pelkowitz. So he quoted a fascinating study. He said, after, you know, now that all these technological advances are going through generations, we can actually do intergenerational studies. And they've seen that when kids grow up, the vast majority of them who were told they couldn't have a cell phone until a certain age hated it when they were told that, but were very appreciative of it later on in life. And the kids that were told they were allowed to have a cell phone when they were in middle school and fourth or fifth grade, as it is now, when they get into high school, almost unanimously they respond to the question, do you wish your parents would have prevented you from having a cell phone? They all say yes. They all say, I wish my parent would have restricted the use of technology so I could get better grades in school, or so I could have more important friendships, or I'd have less angst or anxiety about this or that. It's almost unanimous that the kids later on appreciate that their parents put restrictions. How you do that and when you do that, every kid, every parent is different. Every situation is different, whether it's technology or whether it's food or whether it's whatever it is. That sometimes we feel that we are starting, you know, that we're being mistreated. But it's really, if you retaliate, it's a tarivim adam chinam. It's not for your own benefit. Because, as the end of the pasuk says, lo gamal chara. They didn't do it because they were trying to hurt you. They did it because they were trying to help you. And oftentimes, especially when we're teenagers, we don't realize that. But even when we're adults, we don't always realize that even though a person looks like they're doing something which is mistreating us, quote unquote, well, we really have to realize that they're trying to help us. And as long as their heart is in the right place, we shouldn't start a fight chinam for no justified reason. It's an honest mistake, or it's an honest attempt for them to try to help us. They weren't trying to actually hurt us. So a very, very fascinating psukim tonight from Shlomo Melech about how to have the relationships and how to make sure you don't allow these feelings of anxiety or frustration to fester and to hurt other people. Don't prevent people from doing good things. We've talked about a lot of fascinating things in interpersonal relationships tonight, and that's why we couldn't finish the parak. But Mirza Hashem, next week we'll finish the third parak, and we'll get through some more psukim and some more advice from Shlomo Melech. Okay, have a good week.